Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
I am Jim Dolan. Welcome to the podcast. Well, we're going to get right into the rough and tumble of things with Philip Marlowe, who is a detective. And the program is called Air for G-String, which sounds musical, doesn't it? 1951 is the date for this.
Most Saturdays at this time, we spend an exciting half hour of adventure and action with America's public hero number one, Hopalong Cassidy. Well, even two-fisted cowboys take summer vacations when they can, and Hoppy is no exception. But Hopalong and Topper will be back with us riding the CBS air trails again 4 weeks from tonight, September 22nd.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's transcribed story, Air for G-String.
There's nothing really wrong with a hot summer. But if some sadist really wanted to bring out the worst in anybody, particularly me, after a steaming day, all he has to do is expose me to air conditioning. Take, for instance, the Broadview Hotel, which was on Olive Street in downtown L.A. It ground out alternating currents of cold air from what could laughingly be called the lobby. I'd revolved through the usual doors and stood squinting into the icy darkness. When my eyes leveled off again, I made my way to the elevators, sinking into the deep piled carpeting up to my hot and cold ankles. By the time I reached room 972, I was in the first stages of a chill. Yeah, air conditioning is a marvelous invention. It guarantees the summer cold for life.
Oh, you're Mr. Marlowe?
That's right. That makes you Mr. Allman, huh?
Oh, come in.
Martin Allman?
Come in.
Sure. Yeah, you're nothing like I'd pictured you, Mr. Allman.
Sit down, please, Mr. Marlowe. Pictured me? I don't understand.
Well, all my life I'd heard about Philadelphia lawyers. Somewhere along the line, I drew up a mental 8x10 of a... Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. You just don't look the prototype.
Perhaps that's because I'm only a junior partner in the firm, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
You know, it's an odd thing about prototypes, Mr. Marlowe. They'll trick you.
Oh?
For example, I've always had the idea that men in your... Well, I'll call it a profession.
That's nice of you.
That men in your profession always wore trench coats.
Yeah, well, that's because Bogart looks so good in them.
Yes. Well, about our business together. I'll be here in Los Angeles a few days representing the firm in a number of ways, but while I'm here, I hope to locate a man by the name of Buff Ryan.
Did you say that first name was Buff?
Yes, odd name, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. This Buff Ryan, it seems, has inherited a small amount of money from a maiden aunt who passed away some time ago in Philadelphia.
Oh?
According to our information, my firm is executor of her estate, Mr. Ryan came west about a year ago, and until approximately 6 months ago, he could be reached at a Waring Street address, in care of a C.A. Douglas. But our correspondence to him there has been returned, marked unknown at this address.
That's the last record you have on him,
huh? Yes, that's the last. We've written to this C.A. Douglas, but received no answer from him. I've called him since I arrived in town. There's been no answer.
Well, maybe they've both left town, moved away.
Well, that's possible, of course, but perhaps you'll find that out when you get to checking on Mr. Ryan.
I see. Well, I'm to find him, if I can, and tell him about this inheritance, huh? By the way, how much is it?
$5,000. Just about Miss Leader's entire estate.
Miss Leader sounds like a comment.
Her full name, you may want that, was Julie Leader.
Julie Leader.
I'm sorry, I can't show you a picture of Mr. Ryan. I'm expecting one to be sent out to me while I'm here. Expected it this morning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, well, maybe a description of him will do. Have you ever seen him?
No, no. But we were able to find out that he's slightly less than 6 feet tall, light brown hair, straight. Blue eyes, weighed about 180 pounds when he left Philadelphia a year ago. No distinguishing marks about him, according to our description. Oh, yes, and he's about 35 years old.
Well, that's pretty complete. Oh, you better let me have the last address you have on Ryan, too.
Oh, of course. Here. I've written it down for you with the phone number I've been calling.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be handling most of my business affairs right here at the hotel, Mr. Marlowe. I'll appreciate it if you'll check in occasionally. Let me know your progress.
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to.
Say around 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay. Tell you everything I know about then. Yeah, but then it might not be a thing.
I know your reputation, Mr. Marlowe. You'll find him, I'm sure.
Oh, don't get me wrong. If he's to be found, I'll probably find him. But I have missed, you know. Just why I should want to rock the confidence of a Philadelphia lawyer, I don't know. Maybe it was because Martin Allman, for all his conservative Brooks Brothers attire, looked too much or not enough like what he was supposed to be. Maybe it was because the East Los Angeles address he'd handed me for Buff Ryan was a cinch to be 30 degrees hotter. It was, too. Waring Street was lined with gray little houses surrounded by small gray lawns dotted with straggling gray trees. The color scheme was the direct result of long years of constant neglect. I knocked a long time on the door of the C.A. Douglas residence. The porch was littered with old papers, an assortment of throwaways and leaves. The only response I got was from a scrawny cat, also gray, who leaped up on the porch rail to spit and yowl at me. I yowled back and walked off the porch in the general direction of my car. That's when I noticed a smaller, grayer house behind this one, on the same lot. And I thought I saw a curtain at the front window move slightly. The cat dogged my steps back to see.
Yeah?
Oh, pardon me, but I'm trying to locate C.A. Douglas. Does he still live in the house in front of you?
I don't know. I haven't seen Mr. Douglas in quite a while.
Oh. You think he moved away?
Maybe. I don't know. How would I know?
I don't know.
Well, look, I'm in kind of a hurry. I'm getting dressed to go to work.
How long have you lived here?
What difference does it make?
Did you ever know a guy named Buff Ryan?
Of course not.
Why, of course not? Why not just know?
Listen, I don't know hardly anybody, and I don't know you. And, now it's the phone. Go away, will you please, mister?
No. No, I don't think
Hello?
I will, honey. She was tall, very blonde, very good to look at. A fresh blue housecoat wrapped around just the way it should. And even after I entered the spotless little living room, the faint aura of her cologne lingered on. I couldn't tell anything about the phone conversation she was having in the next room, but I could tell a lot about her by the several scantily clad pictures of her that greeted me from various points of the room. Yeah, I could tell a lot about her.
Hey, what's the idea? You just can't walk in here. Do you want me to call the police?
Not especially. I was just admiring your pictures.
So?
Yeah, you have exceptional handwriting.
You're pretty nosy, aren't you?
I particularly like this sample where it says, "For Buff, darling, my love, Blossom."
Listen, mister, I got things to do, so run along.
How long have you known Buff, honey?
You think I'm kidding about calling the cops? Well, I do it all right, only...
Only what?
Only I'm due downtown at work. Oh, honest, mister, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You got no right to ask me questions about anything. And nothing says I got to answer.
That's right, honey, you sure don't. Now, where's Buff?
I don't know.
I'll drive you downtown and you can tell me all about it, huh?
You're driving me nowhere but out of my mind.
Now, look, I got good news for your boy. He'd want to see me.
Get out!
Okay, Blossom, okay. What time's your first show?
2 o'clock. How did you know?
Yeah, I read the papers. And occasionally, I've been known to contribute to the cultural progress of Los Angeles. You know, save the burlesque houses. The pictures she'd autographed to Buff had been propped up between my sugar bowl and the salt shaker the Sunday morning before, in the theatrical section of the Sunday paper. Yeah, I didn't recognize her with a house coat on. And all the way back downtown, I reflected on the advantages of being well-read. Well, I parked in a lot on a side street to the north end of Skid Row and stopped for lunch at a newspaper man's hangout nearby. It was almost time for Blossom's first show when I felt fortified enough to walk along the street past the blank stares of the winos and the dank air of the Muscatel Missions. Blossom's flag flew above the marquee. Blossom, the flower of burlesque.
How many, please?
One, huh?
There you are, sir.
Thanks. Say, do you think I can get in to see Blossom?
I don't see how you can miss with buying the ticket and all.
No. I mean, I'd like to see her personally in a dressing room. I'd like to talk to her.
Well, I'm sure you have my permission. Whether or not you'll get Blossom's is strictly between her and her moral fiber.
You know something? You're not much help.
You know something? I don't try to be.
I'll miss you.
And here it is, young Harry Lass, cast before a great show. I'm about to pass among you with these boxes of delicious chocolate candy with the nuts inside. And don't forget with each and every purchase. I beg your pardon, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. With the purchase of every box of this delicious chocolate candy with the nuts inside, our very special offer, a genuine gold watch with each and every purchase.
He wasn't going to make a killing, exactly. There weren't more than six guys in the place. I wandered down the side aisle toward a door to one side of the stage and pushed through it. I found myself in a dark, narrow catwalk of a hallway.
Show's going to be out front, Mac. You guys can't come back here.
Well, this guy did. Where can I find Blossom?
Out front. About 10 minutes.
I'll wait for her back here, thanks.
Look, I can make myself clear if I had got
it. I wish you would. Your lighting system's very bad back here.
Well, your light's out front where it counts, Mac. Come on, get
out
of here.
Take it easy, fella. This is business. I don't like being pushed.
That can happen you won't like if you don't get out of here.
Hey, listen, you two. You're causing too much commotion. Now get out front where you belong.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Now, look, I don't know who you are,
well, I can clear that up for you quick, friend. I'm the manager of this theater. Now run along like he did.
Now, where can we talk? In your office?
Why should I talk to you?
Because I'm a booking agent. I want to talk to you about Blossom.
She's booked.
Okay, we'll talk about something else. Where's your office?
Hey, now look, the show's starting. We can't stay back here. Follow me.
Hey, Jerry.
You sure have a bunch of art lovers in the audience.
Sure. It's a class show. Come on, through this door.
All right.
Now then, you're no booking agent, so what's on your mind?
Blossom, and what's your name?
Baloo, George Baloo. Why?
Would it mean anything to you if I told you that Buff Ryan's Aunt Julie died in Philadelphia and left him $5,000?
Wouldn't mean a thing.
Wouldn't, huh?
No.
That's funny, because you're the first one who'd fit the picture.
What picture?
Slightly under 6 feet tall, light brown hair straight, blue eyes, about 35 years old, weigh about 180.
Hey, what are you trying to prove, that you can see me?
Maybe. So my Philadelphia message doesn't interest you, huh?
Nothing about you interests me except how you got in here in the first place.
Bought a ticket.
Then go on out and see the show.
I think I will. I also think I'll stick around and see Blossom after her performance.
I wouldn't do that. If I were you, I'd see the show and get out. I don't want any trouble around here.
I don't either. And if you see Buff before the show's over, tell him I'm out front, will you?
I said I don't want any trouble.
You're in a rut. I walked down the aisle that led backstage, the course I'd already charted. Blossom's costume was less demure than her blue housecoat. It was a school of thought surrounding me that this was more effective. Near the door, I stopped a moment and silent appreciation.
Don't look at her like that.
I didn't know I was.
You don't get any more ideas about going back to her dressing room. I ain't gonna like that.
Now, look. Go back to your seat. Live it up. Baloo said it was okay.
He wouldn't say that. He knows better.
All right, go tell him he knows better.
Yeah, I will. You stay here.
It was the same voice I met backstage the first time. The same pungent odor of muscatel. Before he'd lurched back up the aisle, I'd had a good look at a twisted face and a pair of watery blue eyes. Backstage, I waited for Blossom's act to conclude. It did.
Ooh!
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, love that Monday through Friday night session of Smiles. Beulah is back with Hattie McDaniel again, starring as an over-generous, over-anxious to be wed, overweight damsel holding forth over CBS Radio. Starting this Monday night, listen for Beulah and the Henderson family in a new season of delightful day-to-day doings. Beulah joins the Fall Parade of Stars back to CBS Radio on most of these stations beginning Monday night. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, Air for G-String.
I couldn't have been out long. About 8 bars of imagination unless I'd missed a full chorus. At some point, I was fuzzily aware of being carried sack-style somewhere, then being dropped not too gently onto a set of the noisiest springs I'd ever heard. This music lulled me for a while, and then I heard a door slam, and my head rolled off on the floor and broke.
Come on, Marlowe, you're not dead.
Is that official?
How'd you get in here, anyway?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you. I hardly believe it myself.
You're not supposed to be back here.
Yeah, I know. I've had that pointed out to me several times now. Yeah, and I didn't think I told you my name.
Your wallet was on the floor. I can read.
Oh, yeah. Well, good for you. Who hit me and with what size sandbag?
I don't know.
You never know anything, do you?
Listen, Mr. Marlowe, you've been barging in all day where you're not wanted.
Why didn't you tell me Buff was a wino? Ooh! Hey, look, that's what's left of my head, huh?
I hope it hurt. I hope it hurt awful.
Well, you get your hope it did.
Hey, listen, you, I'm pretty fed up with you.
No, just how you feel, Baloo.
I told you before.
I know what you told me. You don't want any trouble. Okay. Okay, I'm going. Now, Blossom, what about Buff?
I don't know.
Oh, never mind.
Now, don't tell me you want another ticket.
Not me, kid. I've taken the cure.
How is your moral fiber?
Like Gibraltar. You know a guy named Buff Ryan?
For free, I don't know my own mother.
You don't, huh?
Mm-mm.
See your point. Here. Here's mine. Memory getting any better?
It's clearing up a little.
Thought it would.
Well, when he ain't here, which he ain't right now, He's usually at Mother Morris's. That's for one.
Mother Morris's, huh?
Mm-hmm. Flophouse, 3 doors down. Or for two, try Tilly's, 4 doors down. A saloon.
Thank you. Mother Morris couldn't help me, lovable old lush that she was. And a penetrating search of the 25-cent bed she sold revealed a lot of things. But no Buff Ryan. Tilly's downstairs next door didn't look very promising at first, but that was before I saw the twisted face with the watery blue eyes at the far end of the bar. Beside him, the unofficial dean and philosopher of Skid Row, J. Fenton Prentice. I started toward them, but a cordon of winos surrounded me before I could reach him.
That's him, Prentice. That's the one.
Yeah, Prentice, I'm the one. Will you call the brothers here off, make them breathe in another direction, and let me talk to Buff?
We're a close association here, Mr. Marlowe. Outsiders are not welcome.
Oh, come on, Prentice. You know me well enough.
Perhaps, Mr. Marlowe, but we know each other better, my associates and I. My young friend Buff here quite obviously does not wish to talk with you. We're merely respecting his wishes. In our own way.
Oh, come on. Look, this is cockeyed. Maybe this isn't the place to say it, but you've inherited money, Buff. That's all I came to tell you.
Really?
Yeah? Who died?
Your Aunt Julie.
Don't let him say any more, Prentice. Don't let him get to me. I gotta get out of here.
If you gentlemen will restrain Mr. Marlowe...
Buff, you crazy fool! Listen to me. There's a lawyer here from Philadelphia to see you. He's at the Broadview, will you? For heaven's sake, get in touch with him. Listen to me.
They will, son. They will.
The lawyer's name is Martin Orman, you idiot. Go see him.
Let go of me,
you stupid dolts. Yeah. Thanks, Prentice. And nothing. Buff was nowhere to be seen when I hit the street. Didn't matter. It was 3:00. I delivered my message from Martin Orman. Buff could take it from there. Now, I may be wrong, but most guys like to inherit dough. Still, you can never tell with a wino. And Buff was, as they say, bona fide. Martin Allman was glad to see me. That was a nice change of pace. I told him all I knew. Didn't take long.
I'm afraid you've had quite a bad experience, Mr. Marlowe. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too.
Oh, by the way, And this picture arrived, special delivery from Philadelphia about an hour ago.
Oh?
Is this the reluctant chap you tracked down?
Let me see that. Oh, yeah, that's Buff, before Muscatel.
Well, you've done a fine job, Mr. Marlowe. I made your check out for you.
Thanks. Say, you going to try to get in touch with Buff yourself?
Perhaps. Not personally, of course. You're certain that Waring Street address, the little house in back, should reach him?
Yeah. Or I suppose you could get in touch with him through Blossom at the Burlesque Theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done all we can for now. Unfortunately, I've been called back to Philadelphia. I'm taking a plane out in an hour.
Well, what about Buff and the inheritance?
Well, now that I know he can be reached, we'll mail it to him. After all, we can't force it on him, now can we, Mr. Marlowe?
No. Doesn't look like we can. Yeah, well, he's all yours, Mr. Allman. Martin Allman seemed satisfied that we'd done our job. So I left wishing someone would come up to me and tell me Aunt What's-Her-Name had left me 5,000 clams. When I got back to my car, I had it all figured how I'd go home and forget what Martin had called quite a bad experience. One look inside my car told me it wasn't going to work out that way at all.
You weren't as long as I thought you'd be, Mr. Marlowe.
How'd you get here from Skid Row, Prentice? Fly?
I always taxi.
How nice for you.
After you left Tilly's, I fell to thinking, Mr. Marlowe.
Quite a fall.
It occurred to me that perhaps you were telling Buff the truth all the time.
I was. That's not important now, is it?
Oh, yes. I should say it's quite important.
Really?
You mustn't be too hard on Buff, Mr. Marlowe. He's like most men on the row. He probably has his reasons for running. Running from life, perhaps. Running from himself. Or others.
Are you trying to tell me something, Prentice?
Now, that would be presumptuous of me, Mr. Marlowe. Temper justice with mercy. That much I say to you. I tell you, Buff Ryan is running. And with reason. If his reason interests you, then I suggest you set about finding out what it is.
Well, is there any reason why I should?
No. No, there isn't, but this much I do know. He has left the row, and he is running.
I saved J. Fenton Prentice's taxi fare back to what he affectionately referred to as the row. Yeah, he wouldn't have followed me if he hadn't wanted me to know something peculiar about Buff. And yet, his odd code kept him from telling me himself. And I knew that code well enough to know that it had something to do with the police. Yeah, well, like I say, I'm a curious fella.
Well, now, Phil, is this a big-time or small-time crook, this Ryan?
He's pretty small, Sergeant Mooney, if he is one.
Mm. Aliases?
No, not that I know of. Uh-huh.
Well, we'll try Ryan just for size, huh?
Mm.
Buff's a crazy name.
He's a crazy guy.
We'll have to look for it in the moniker file if we don't have it here. Hold it here. This your guy?
Where? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Let's see that, will you? Take it out of there.
Yeah.
Let's see, not much of a reckon. Suspect, armed robbery, charges dropped. Suspect, extortion, charges dropped.
I wonder why they bothered to take his picture.
I don't know. Aliases. Buff Raglan, Bob Rutledge, C.A. Douglas.
Mm?
Hello.
What?
Takes care of one question mark.
Does it?
Yeah, take my word for it, kid, it does. Let's see. Last question in connection with the slaying of Julie Lita, Philadelphia. Wait a minute. Aunt Julie, holy smoke! I knew I didn't like this Martin Allman. I didn't bother to check his record. I got the picture. No wonder Buff ran from me like the plague. Martin had suckered me into setting Buff up for the kill. Marlowe, the finger man, that's great. Well, I got back to the theater and practically nothing flat. Yanked Blossom practically off stage, shoved her into my car and drove like mad to the little gray house behind the little gray house. Prentice said Buff had left Skid Row. If he wasn't on Waring Street, he might be anywhere, including dead. Martin was paying off a cab driver in front of the house. Blossom cued me to the alley entrance and back.
Please, God, please don't let anything happen to him.
Don't crack now, honey. We'll make it in time if you just let us in.
He's got to, Mr. Marlowe. He's my husband.
Okay. Take it easy, baby.
Stand away from him, Blossom, or I'll kill you, too.
No, Buff, no!
Now, listen, Buff, Martin's coming in the front. You can't waste time with us.
I don't believe you, Marlowe. You're part of the deal. Hey, what is this?
You should have listened to me. Buff! Oh. I'm sorry, Blossom. I had to.
He's all right.
He's just out. Now, listen, you got to answer that front door.
No.
Answer it. I'll be right behind the door. He won't do anything to you. Just let him come in.
But I'm afraid.
So am I. Come on.
Oh, how do you do? I was looking for a gentleman by the name of Buff Ryan. I'm an old friend of his. I understood he lived here.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Is he at home now?
Yes. Won't you come in?
Oh, thank you.
Marlowe, thank heaven.
Thank me. I got his gun.
Are you all right?
Never felt better. Go throw some water on your boy and get him in here. Maybe he'll talk now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I will. Now.
Buff, darling, you're not hurt?
Not anymore, honey. I don't figure you, I guess, Marlowe. I thought you were on Martin's team.
I was at first, when I thought the business about you inheriting the 5,000 bucks was legitimate. What's he got against you?
I saw too much once, about a year ago. I saw Martin kill Julie Leader. I was the only one who saw it. I knew he'd give me the same thing if he ever got the chance. He can't do that now, can he?
Not if you'll talk, when we get the law here.
Buff, why didn't you tell me?
Silly question, honey. Sure, Marlowe. Call the law. It'll be almost a pleasure to talk.
So much for that. Buff and Blossom are doing fine. Every once in a while, we sit in the third row and yell, "Down in front." Yeah, he's got a good job now. And soon they'll have enough for the traditional vine-covered respectability. Oh, by the way, he's taken to wearing Brooks Brothers-type suits. You know what? He looks just like a Philadelphia lawyer. How do you like that?
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, starring Gerald Moore, are produced and transcribed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Kathleen Height. Featured in the cast were Jack Moyles as Buff Ryan, Michael Ann Barrett as Blossom, and John Stevenson as Martin Allman, with Sidney Miller as Mr. Ballou, Norman Field as J. Fenton Prentice, Grace Leonard as Gloria B., Sergeant Mooney is played by Jack Crucian. Gerald Moore may currently be seen in the Santana production, Sirocco. The special music for Philip Marlowe is composed by Pierre Garagank and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Be sure to listen next week at the same time when Philip Marlowe says,
"This time she was lovely and I was engaged. Engaged to help a beautiful shepherd who had a flock of trouble. We found a lost sheep, and something else she didn't know she lost."
This coming Monday night, keep the evening free, because the great fall parade of stars and shows back to CBS Radio will begin in earnest. Enjoy suspense moving into Monday evening, raising the curtain with William Holden in the leading role of a brand new spine tingler. Enjoy Lux Radio Theater's The Mudlark, starring Irene Dunne and Sir Cedric Hardwick. Enjoy The Bob Hawke Show, back in business with $3,000 to start the season's quiz bang fun. Yes, they're all coming back to CBS Radio this Monday night. Yours on most of these same CBS stations. Today, with the country rising to meet the challenge of aggression, the Red Cross has been asked by the government to undertake tremendous tasks. By giving generously to the Red Cross, you'll help mobilize for the defense of your families, your community, and the nation. Give as much as you can today. Clarence Cassell speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
And now comes the comedy part on the podcast with America's favorite drinking band leader, Phil Harris. It's the Phil Harris Now Is Faye show, and Phil's in trouble. He's been fighting with a man in the market. Let's listen to it and find out what happens. This is from October 16th, 1949.
Good health to all from Rexall. It's the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists.
Good evening. This is your Rexall family druggist with a message that will save you money. Next Wednesday morning at every store with the orange and blue Rexall sign on the window, the greatest one-cent sale in Rexall's history begins. From then until the closing of the stores Saturday night, you can buy two regular guaranteed Rexall products for the price of one plus 1 cent. Now, here's an example. The regular price of Rexall's famous mouthwash, MI-31, is 69 cents. During Rexall's 1 cent sale, you get two bottles for 70 cents. That's right. Just a penny more buys twice as much. Now, this offer of two for a penny more applies to 360 items. All the way from vitamins to toothpaste, from cold cream to cough syrup, from mineral oil to rubbing alcohol. And what's more important, these are Rexall products, and you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. It's early morning in Encino, and the main street is practically deserted, except for a few early risers who are on their way to work. It's quite peaceful when suddenly the stillness is broken by the cry of a newsboy.
Extra! Extra! Phil Harris in nightclub brawl! Read all about it! Delinquent husband of Alice Faye does it again! Get your papers!
Hey, kid, give me one of those papers, quick.
Here you are, sir. Hi, Mr. Remley. Mm. I see your pal, Mr. Harris, slugged some little guy. How'd it happen?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't understand how he managed to get into a fight without me around to start it. So we went to a nightclub. Wait a minute, kid. This article says he socked a guy in the Encino market. What's the idea of yelling nightclub?
I sell more papers that way. Nightclub brawls are the fad these days.
That's not ethical, son. You're getting paid to be a newsboy. You're taking money under false pretenses.
You run your business and I'll run mine. Besides, you do the same thing in your business.
What do you mean?
Ain't you getting paid to play the guitar?
Touché, my lad. Well, I better get over to Curly's house and hear his side of the story.
Alice, don't get excited. Don't pay any attention to that headline in the paper. I can explain how the fight started.
I don't care how it started. You ought to be ashamed of yourself getting into a public brawl.
But, honey, I was forced into it. I was in the market buying two bottles of celery tonic. When 12 holdup men surrounded me.
How many?
Two bottles. As I was saying, honey, there were 12 men. Two of these big guys had revolvers, another
Philip.
Big guy had a sawed-off shotgun, and another big guy
Philip,
had a...
Philip, according to this article, there weren't 12 men with guns. There was one little man with a shopping bag.
Do they say what he had in the bag?
No.
A machine gun, honey. He started right up against me.
Phil, stop it. Stop it. Where did you get into a fight with this man?
I keep telling you I had to. He insulted my band. He said he didn't like my music.
If you went around hitting everybody who said that, you wouldn't have time for anything else.
Thank you for the small potatoes. Besides, I didn't hit him. We got into an argument. He swung at me. I ducked and Well, I gave him a little shove. It couldn't have hurt him.
Oh, the paper says that when you pushed him, he was thrown against the wall and knocked unconscious. Well, you should be careful. You don't know your own strength. You're a powerful man.
Yeah, but, honey, I... Yes, I guess I am at that. Yes, sir. Now, if I can find my place, I'll go ahead. Here it is, here it is. Don't help me. You're right, honey. I'm 185 pounds of solid bone and muscle.
And no brains. A man with intelligence doesn't get into fights.
Look, growing pains. One more caustic remark and I'll smash every bottle of your cod liver oil. Now, the only reason that you don't get into fights is because you're afraid.
I am not. During the war, I almost got into a fight with a Marine.
No.
Yes. This Marine made me very angry, ordering me around, telling me what to do, treating me like dirt. I said, one more nasty word from you and I'll punch you right in the nose.
You said that to a Marine?
Yes, and she was a lieutenant, too.
Phil, I'm ashamed of you. You've got to learn to control your temper.
Well, what do you expect me to do when a guy takes a poke at me? I got to protect myself. I can't just stand... I'll get that. Gee, you'd think your wife would stick up for you instead of finding fault just because I get into a public brawl and I can... Oh, hello, Frankie.
Hiya, Bogey. Where are you fighting tonight, Mocambo, Ciro's, or the A&P?
Hey, leave me alone. I'm in no mood for jokes. I had a little argument with Alice.
Oh, now you're fighting with women. What'd she try to do, pet your panda? Hey, what's with that fight you had at the market?
Well, some big guy tried to jump me. But by sheer power, I managed to subdue him.
Oh, you magnificent brute, you.
He was a big guy, huh?
Gigantic. At least 6'8".
Yeah, I know. He was 6'8", weighed 345 pounds. He had horns, and he breathed fire.
Oh, you saw him too, huh? I was positively the...
Hello, Frankie.
Oh, hello, Alice. I was just talking to Mighty Joe Young here.
All right, Brimley. It was nothing, and let's not talk about it anymore. I don't want to... Come in. Remember, I don't want to hear another word about the fight. Now, just let it drop.
Pardon me. Are you Mr. Harris?
Yeah.
I've got something for you. A subpoena.
For me? Oh, gee. I wonder who could have sent them. Hey, Alice, get a vase and we'll put them right in.
A vase?
All right, a vase. Get something to put them in before they die.
Curly, a subpoena is a summons.
I know a subpoena is a... Summons!
Yeah, the guy you hit yesterday is suing you for assault and battery. Here you are, take it.
It ain't for me.
Your name is Harris, isn't it?
My name is Harris, but...
Phil Harris?
Oh, Phil. Sorry, mister. You see, you've got the wrong party. I'm Vladimir Harris.
Vladimir?
Da.
The Russian side of the family, you know. La hukti hai leho. La zukti maliko. Ah, to be in Siberia now that the salt mines are in bloom again.
Hey, Rasputin, shall I get our American friend a glass tea?
No, 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 Tavarich. Get out samovar. I feel like hot borscht.
Oh, you can't get out of it, honey. You might as well admit you're Phil Harris.
Quiet, Lubitsky.
So you are Phil Harris, huh? Well, take this summons and don't forget you to appear before Judge Kerwin at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Goodbye.
Phil, look at this summons. This man is suing you for $10,000.
What? That's ridiculous. I barely touched the guy. I tell you, it's a frame-up. It's a fraud. I didn't hurt him. I'm innocent.
Then you have nothing to worry about. Look, Phil, was there anybody at the market who saw this fight and would testify for you?
Yeah, there was one witness. But I got news for you. It ain't going to do me any good.
It was Julius Abruzzio.
So?
So slip my pants and shave my head. I'm headed for the hot seat.
Why do you say that, Phil? Doesn't Julius like you?
Oh, Myrna, you better stop counting your money and start listening to this program once.
Hey, Curly, if Julius is the only witness, we got to get to him. It's your only chance.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, we can give it a try. Let's go over to the market and talk to him.
Well, if he doesn't like you, I don't think he'll testify for you. Oh, Phil, I don't see any way out of this.
Ah, don't be a pessimist. Cheer up. Be happy. Why don't you sing, Alice?
I don't feel like singing.
I do.
Nobody asked you.
I don't care. I feel a little Milton Burleysh. Young Johnny Jones, he had a cute little boat, and all the girlies he would take for a float. He had girlies by the score, sweet little peaches on the shore. But Johnny was a Weisenheimer, you know. His steady girl was Flo. And every Sunday afternoon, they'd jump in his boat and then he'd spoon. And then he'd row, row, row. Right up that river he would row, row, row. A hug he'd give her, then he'd kiss her now and then. She would tell him when. He'd fool around and fool around, and then he'd kiss again, and then he'd row, row, row. A little further he would row, just he and Flo. With her head on his chest, he'd take a few measures rest, and then he'd row, row, row. In Johnny's boat he had a cute little seat, and all the kisses that he stole were so sweet. And he knew just how to row. He was a rowing Romeo. He knew an island where the trees were so grand. He knew just where to land. Then tales of love he'd tell to Flo until it was time for them to go. And then he'd row, row, row. On up that river he would row so slow. That hug he'd give her, then he'd kiss her now and then. She would tell him when. He'd fool around and fool around, and then he'd kiss again, and then he'd row. All up that river he would row, just he and Flo. Then he'd drop both his oars, take a few more encores, and then he'd row, 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 just he and Florence. Row, row, row right into heaven. Row, row. He had no Johnson motors, so Johnny and Flo would row, row, row.
I don't see Julius anyplace. You suppose it's his day off?
I don't think... Oh, there he is behind the meat counter. Do you want me to talk to him,
no,
Phil?
No. Now, you better let me and Frankie handle him. We're more subtle than you are. Come on, Frankie. Now, remember, let's not antagonize this little guy. Let's try... Good morning, Julius.
Greetings, Julius.
Well, if it ain't Mickey Harrison, his trigger man.
Hey, did you hear that, Frankie? Kid, come right on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this boy's a clip.
Oh, yeah. Great sense of humor.
Yeah.
I didn't say nothing that funny. What do you hoodlums want?
I want to talk to you, Julius. Jewel Dare. You know, you were the only witness to that little misunderstanding that I was involved in yesterday.
Misunderstanding? Oh, you mean that brutal bloody battle?
What brutal bloody battle?
The one in which, without provocation, you attacked that helpless old man with a meat cleaver.
I didn't attack nobody with no meat cleaver.
Sorry, but that's the way I saw it with my biased little eyes.
Hey, Julius... Have you been called to testify in court today?
Yeah, I got my subpoena a little while ago. What about it?
Julius, look. Your testimony can either save or condemn me. Now, I know that... Well, I know we've had our little differences, but... Underneath it all, we have a deep affection for each other.
True.
Well, Julie boy, with that in mind, when you get up on the stand, what are you going to say in my behalf, little chum?
Mr. Harris, what are them things hanging up in the window there?
They're ducks.
Well, climb up on that empty hook. You are now one of them.
Hey, Julius, excuse us a minute. Hey, Curly, being nice to him ain't gonna work.
Keep telling me that. I ain't gonna do no good, and if he testifies, it's gonna ruin me.
Mm. Of course, if he doesn't show up in court, he can't testify. Can he?
No. Remley.
Hmm?
You keep talking to him, and I'll back him into that coffee grinder.
Okay. I'll set the machine. Oh. How do you think he'll look best, percolator or regular grinder?
Make it drip. It fits his personality. Wait a minute. Hold it. Wait a minute, Remley. We can't do that to a kid. He's just a kid. That's too cruel.
We got to do something to him.
I got it. What? Let's lock him in the refrigerator.
Yeah, that's more humane.
We'll quick freeze him a little. Now, we can always defrost him after the trial. Mm-hmm. Frankie, this is the best idea.
Curly, it's so loud. Listen, what's the best way to get him in the refrigerator?
We'll tell him. We want some meat.
It won't work.
Why not?
Because I ain't gonna go!
Julia, shame on you. You were listening. It's bad manners to eavesdrop.
It's good manners. To make an ice cube out of me. If I have my inning in court, I'll give the judge an earful about
But Julius,
you.
Please, I...
Come on, Curly, come on. You're wasting your time with him. He ain't gonna help you.
Oh, I guess you're right. Let's get out of here.
Well, how did you do, fellas?
We threw three. Tried to reason with the guy, but he ain't gonna listen. I told you...
Let me talk to him. I think I can handle him. I'll be right back.
It ain't gonna do you no good. Oh, Frankie, I'm in trouble. I don't know what to do.
Well, the only one thing you can do. Get yourself a good lawyer.
Yeah, but I ain't never had no occasion to use a lawyer before. Where can I get a good one?
Well, among my acquaintances, there's an esteemed barrister whose reputation is irrefutable. I can vouch for his integrity, as he and I are inseparable companions.
What?
I know a guy.
Now he's trying to sneak him in on me. Look, I don't want no part of no guy you know. No.
All right.
Besides, I don't need no lawyer. All I need is some good character witness to testify that I'm a fine, upstanding, sterling citizen.
Oh. Well, let me take care of that. I'll get you the best witnesses that money can buy.
Frankie.
What's
it? Mr. Remley. What a horrid suggestion. I don't have to buy no witness to testify to my character. I can get any number of people who would be glad to do that for nothing. I could... Well, I know I could get... Well, then there... Well, not even... What scale for them witnesses?
I know where we can get all we need for as little as a dollar.
Phil, your worries are over. Julius just promised me that he'd testify for you and tell the truth.
He did. Oh, gee, you're wonderful. Hey, how'd you do it?
I promised him there was something I wouldn't do.
I don't care what it was. Come here, baby, and give me a great big kiss.
Oh, sorry. That's what I promised him I wouldn't do.
Well, I don't care. Now that Julius is going to tell the truth, we ain't got nothing to worry about. We don't need no lawyer, no witness, no nothing.
That's
huh?
Right, Curly. Hey, it's almost 3:00. We better get over to the court.
Well, come on, let's go.
Phil,
the policeman said Judge Kerwin is holding court right across the hall there.
Okay, then we better get in there.
Hey, you better let me do all the talking, Curly. I know more about the law than you do.
You should. You've been here often enough on disorderly conduct charges.
Alice.
Oh, I was only kidding, Frankie.
Well, don't kid about things like that. I've never been in court in my life. I've never been arrested, and I resent it when you...
Quiet! Quiet! Quiet in the courtroom, please. What's the meaning of this?
I'm the defendant, Your Honor.
What's your name?
Phil Harris.
Have you ever been in court before?
No, sir.
What's your name, miss?
I'm Mrs. Harris.
Have you ever been in court before?
No, sir.
Hello, Frankie.
Hiya, Judge.
For a guy who ain't never been to court before, you get around pretty clever, don't you, Clarence?
Felix and I went to Harvard Law School together.
Mr. Harris, a suit has been brought against you by the plaintiff, Mr. Charles Maul. Are you represented by counsel?
If it pleases the court, Your Honor, I shall represent Mr. Harris.
I object.
So do I.
Me too.
Please. One more outburst like that, and I shall be forced to eject all of you from this courtroom.
Mr. Remley, if you persist in your disrespectful attitude, I'll hold you in contempt of court.
But, Your Honor, I got a right to represent Mr. Harris. I know the law, and as a citizen, I stand on my constitutional rights.
You can't stand on your constitutional rights.
Very well. Then I'll sit on my ipso facto.
Your Honor, I'm not guilty in this case, and I don't need a lawyer. I got a witness who can prove that I'm innocent. Julius Abruzzo, step forward.
Here I am.
Look, kid, when you take the stand, I want you to forget that you're just Julius and act nice. Won't you? Please, now just sit down and try to make a good impression on the judge.
You want me to expose my legs?
No, just cover your face. Now, Julius, I want you to tell the court here just what happened, and I want you to tell the truth.
Yes, son. Did Mr. Harris strike the plaintiff?
Oh, no, Your Honor. I have known Mr. Harris for years, and I assure you he's not the kind of man to strike another person.
He's too kind?
No, he's too yellow.
Don't be a wise witness. All the judge wants to know is, did I hit this guy?
No, Your Honor, he didn't. The plaintiff took a swing at Mr. Harris, missed him, and fell down.
Oh, he fell down?
Yeah. At that point, Mr. Harris started kicking the stuffings out.
That's a lie. I didn't kick him, and you know it.
Then how come old Sullivan was stamped on his forehead?
Because this is a corny program. Gee whiz, you're only imagining things. I didn't hurt the guy, and I can prove it. Now bring him in, and you'll see that there isn't a mark on him.
Very well. Bailiff, wheel in the plaintiff.
Wheel him! Oh, but Your Honor, I tell you, I didn't even touch
him. Oh, Phil, look at him. Not only is he in a wheelchair, he's covered with bandages.
I tell you, I'm being framed.
Hey, Curly, you're in trouble. You better let me handle this. I know the law, and I know how I can get you out of
it. Well, all right, go ahead.
Right. Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I believe that I can legally establish Mr. Harris's innocence. May I borrow your law book?
Here you are.
Thank you. On what page do I find the loopholes?
Mr. Remley, I'll thank you to be seated. I'll get to the bottom of this. I want the plaintiff to take the witness stand.
I'd like to, but I can't, Your Honor. After the unmerciful beating Mr. Harris gave me, I can't move my legs.
You're lying. My husband did not hit you.
He did, too.
He did not.
He did, too.
Ah, your mother drinks warm beer.
That's my little woman that said that.
Hey, Curly. Come here a minute.
Yeah.
This guy's a phony, and I think I can prove it. Watch me.
Mr. Maul.
You say that you can't move your legs.
No, I have no feeling in them.
Uh-huh. In other words,
You wouldn't feel a thing if I were to kick you in the shin like this.
Ow! Why, you? I'll get you for this. I'll break every bone in your body.
Phil, look, there's nothing wrong with him. He's gotten out of his wheelchair. He's chasing Frankie all over the court.
Hey, cut it out. Stop beating me.
Never mind.
Curly! Hey, Curly, stop and get him off me.
You see, Your Honor, there's nothing wrong with that man. Look at that healthy job he's doing beating up Frankie.
Order in the court. Order in the court. Case dismissed.
Oh, hey, stop twisting my hands.
You're breaking my little guitar finger.
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. But first, here's your Rexall Family Druggist.
If you're looking for a painless way to lower your cost of living, let me remind you that the easiest method I know is only 2 days away.
You mean Rexall's one-cent sale that I read about in all those big magazine ads?
Sure do, ma'am. The greatest one-cent sale in Rexall's history. Everywhere in the country, wherever you see the orange and blue Rexall sign on the window, next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday are the miracle days when you get two fine-quality, guaranteed Rexall products for the price of one plus 1 cent.
Exactly how does that work?
Well, take our 100-tablet bottle of Rexall aspirin, for example. Ordinarily, it sells for 49 cents, but during the 1 cent sale, you get two bottles for 50 cents.
Say, that extra penny is pretty powerful.
So powerful, it buys twice as much. What's more, you'll find exactly 360 of these twin bargains in our stores. Everything from Rexall Milk of Magnesia to Rexall Cleanso toothbrushes. From Rexall Cod Liver Oil to Rexall Vitamin products.
Mister, I'm saving my pennies for Wednesday.
We'll save a lot of them, ma'am. Every one of them doubles your buying power. Best of all, you'll be getting Rexall products. And you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall.
Player in courtroom brawl. Read all about it. Remley, well-known rummy in rumpus.
You know, Phil, Frankie took quite a beating on your behalf.
I know, honey. I know that, and I appreciate it. I owe him a lot. And I'm going over to see him and do something big for him just to show my appreciation.
What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to have him moved out of that ward into a semi-private room this very day.
This program was produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast were Earl Ross, Hal March, and Sidney Miller. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appears through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. Remember, next Wednesday begins the four biggest bargain days in the year, the greatest one-cent sale in Rexall's history. Remember, next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, look for the store with the orange and blue Rexall sign on the window. Then step inside and buy twice as much for just a penny more.
You're tuned for the stars on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.